Good morning. I'm here to warn you not to be fooled by the increasing public denial of the ongoing pandemic of the disease caused by the virus SARS-CoV-2. No, COVID is not killing the way it did 4 years ago, but it is still killing people, about 1,000 each week in the U.S., or one every 10 minutes, not including those who die of heart attacks, cancer, or other illnesses caused or made worse by COVID. It's still infecting hundreds of thousands of us every day, still debilitating and disabling people, still causing brain damage, heart damage, muscle damage, and immune damage that makes us more vulnerable to other diseases as well. Analyses of wastewater, one of the few remaining sources of information, suggest that this past winter was the pandemic's second highest wave of transmission in the U.S., and the virus is still circulating at higher levels than at this time in previous years. The virus mutates rapidly, so you can get it over and over again. Researchers at the Pandemic Mitigation Collaborative recently calculated that the U.S. has seen an average of more than 3 cumulative infections per person. The rate of infection was slower in the first 2 years of the pandemic because of widespread mitigations like masking, but has increased since those protections were largely dropped. At the current rate, in 4 more years, the U.S. will reach an average of more than 7 cumulative infections per person. Many people probably underestimate their number of infections because of reduced emphasis on testing, false negatives, and asymptomatic cases, although those infected but with no symptoms can still both suffer damage and spread the virus to others. Serious long-term outcomes often start to escalate around the third infection. March 15th was International Long COVID Awareness Day, though you might not have been aware of that, since much of mainstream media marked it chiefly by a new round of minimizing and denial. But recent household pulse surveys show an increase in cases of long COVID, just as we might expect following a surge. In the U.S., millions of adults and millions of children are affected by long COVID. Post-acute sequelae of COVID, as it's also called, varies widely in severity, but in Oregon, for instance, about 10% of all those who get COVID are still, 4 months later, suffering ongoing symptoms severe enough to reduce their ability to carry out daily tasks. Less than 10% of those suffering long COVID report feeling fully recovered after 2 years. And of course, as with the other disasters currently accumulating here and around the world, impacts are worse for those already oppressed and disadvantaged. Poor people, people of color, and trans, non-binary, and queer adults have some of the highest rates of long COVID. The CDC knew all this when, on March 1st, they released their new one-day COVID isolation policy, bringing to the rest of the nation the recklessness already enshrined in state policy in Oregon and California. They released this policy before expected without having had the customary period for public comment. They released it on the Disability Day of Mourning, dedicated to remembering people with disabilities murdered by their families and, as disability activist Alice Wong says, a day of rage and mourning for people with disabilities' social deaths at the hands of the state. The policy has been widely criticized as a further step in the capitalist and state policies of denying and minimizing a disabling and immune-compromising airborne virus. Back in 2021, the CDC shortened the recommended isolation period from 10 days down to 5 at the behest of the airline industry, even though people with COVID are commonly infectious for 10 days and sometimes longer, even while without any symptoms, and the new and unclear policy gives cover to employers and official agencies to deny sick leave and further endanger workers and schoolchildren. As Beatrice Adler-Bolton of the Death Panel podcast notes, by further loosening isolation guidelines, again, with no scientific basis, the CDC perpetuates exploitation of workers and non-workers alike, exposing us to financial instability and forced sickness. COVID is class war, exacerbating contradictions of capitalism, deepening the class divide. To keep as many of us as possible alive and as strong as possible for our continuing struggles, we need to keep trying to reduce the spread of illness. And tightly fitting, high-filtration respirator masks like N95s and KN95s work pretty well to do that. So do improved air quality, ventilation, and HEPA filtration. Some events have shown us good COVID mitigations. When congressional staffers walked out last November in support of a ceasefire in Gaza, all of them wore respirator masks for the outdoor event because, yes, you can get COVID outdoors. Several book fairs last year had robust COVID precautions, providing respirator masks for attendees, monitoring to ensure their consistent use, and providing improved ventilation and air filtration. It can be done. Shout out here to the upcoming Portland Workers' Assembly discussion series for worker-centered political education, organized by Jobs with Justice, coming monthly starting April 11th, and for which masks are required. COVID is a labor issue. Activist and left events increasingly announce that masks are encouraged, and I certainly see more respirator masks at left events than in mainstream venues. But we can still do more. Ana de Ocampo Kane on Instagram not long ago called in those who are part of queer and or leftist communities who pride themselves on inclusivity, writing that, quote, "Masking sometimes is better than never masking at all. If you stop masking, you can start again. Every person masked in solidarity with each other makes spaces safer. It is socially isolating to be the only one masked somewhere. Be a friend and mask up with us. Masking is the new queer flagging. Pass it on. My mask protects you. Your mask protects me." It says, we are already missing half a generation of us. It is what harm reduction looks like. Your mask tells me that we already share values. It says, I want you to be safe. You belong here. It shows that you consider the way your actions impact others. Your mask is a middle finger to the medical industrial complex. It says, a condom or an N95 can't keep me from loving you. It is solidarity with vulnerable bodies. Your mask tells me you are critical of the system. It says, I will not serve your agenda at the expense of lives. It is a rejection of mass disablement and white supremacist eugenics. Your mask tells me how you show up for others. It says, I am in community with you. It is radical care shown to strangers. My mask protects you. Your mask protects me. It says, your norms do not serve us. Our masks are queer as, oh, I can't say that on the radio, but you get the idea. You'll be able to find the text of my comments with links to sources and more information when this piece is posted on the KBOO website. For the Old Mole, this has been Fran Michelle, reminding you to wear a mask, share a mask.
Professional and surround us as we go about our work. Sickness and disease in every nook and cranny lurk. We may soon succumb beneath its ever-present